Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jamie.
Is it loud enough? Okay. I was just saying, they were like, can you hold the microphone? I'm like, sure, I love karaoke, so this is kind of, I feel like this is good. But I do get nervous when I speak, because I don't really like to tell people about myself. That was like a big thing for when I was drinking. I had lots and lots of secrets. So I guess I had my first drink when I was 15. I grew up in Westchester, in a really nice town. It was me, my mom, my dad, my brother, and a dog, and looked good on the outside. I played sports. Sports were everything to me. So I never, ever thought I would drink or do drugs. I had, like, this whole stereotype of, like, no offense, but, like, big guy in a wife beater drinking Budweiser, and that's, like, all I thought who drank. I knew nothing else about it. My parents didn't drink. So it was just like, that's what I thought, that's who drank. And I was a freshman in high school. I was on all the varsity teams, and the seniors were drinking, and it was like second semester. They were all really respected kids. They were going to like Ivy League colleges, and they were drinking. So in my mind, I was like, how bad could this actually be? So one of the seniors, who was my brother, was a senior as well. She decided that, you know, I was like kind of curious, so she got me drunk. Me and another freshman, we got wasted and threw up all over our friend's mother's garden. I don't really remember much of it, but for some reason, I just remember loving it. And for me, the obsession kind of came first, because I was in ninth grade, and my brother always got in trouble. He was always getting into trouble. So I knew if I did anything that he would like be like, oh, I can get Jamie in trouble, he would take the chance, he would do it. He would tell my parents, and you know, the first time he found out I smoked a cigarette, he told my mom, so I can get in trouble. But I was such a good kid that my mom's reaction was, my mom smoked, and she was like, well, you should have just asked me, I would have smoked your first cigarette with you. And I was like, that was not gonna happen. But it was just anything. So when my brother somehow got into college, when he left, he left that summer, and it was now sophomore year, I was able to start drinking. And for me, it was never about just drinking a couple of drinks. I didn't know that it even could exist. It was all about just getting wasted. I just wanted to get as drunk as possible. So on the weekends, my friend, it's really sad, we took advantage of the fact that her father was sick and the mom was a doctor and like had to stay home. So we would just stay in her basement and we would drink whatever we could get. It was pretty easy. We would just drive down to the Bronx or to Yonkers and go into these places. They would give us alcohol. And we would just drink there the entire time. I was the one that was always getting wasted and always throwing up. None of my friends were. And then, you know, we did that all weekend, and then Monday came about, and it was like, how are we going to get alcohol for the following weekend? And I was always trying to plan. That's it. I was the one that was trying to make the party and find the alcohol. And during the week, because sports were like, you know, was a big deal to me, I focused on my sports. So like my two escapes were the weekend, it was alcohol, and then drugs. And during the week, it was sports. And I knew that my drinking was different than everyone else's. Like I said, my friends were not always trying to find alcohol. They were not throwing up. We would go to a diner late at night. They were not getting kicked out of the diner and having the cops called on them. And so I went on the internet, and it was AOL. And I still have my AOL email address. And I went online, and I just searched alcoholism, and I took that test, and I knew that I didn't have a driver's license yet, I didn't have a job, so I knew that I couldn't obviously, you know, say yes, I lost a job, but the ones that were applicable to me, I was able to say yes to. And the only thing was that because my parents thought I was like this perfect child, I could not tell them. And so now I'm drinking, and I continued to drink, and I knew there was something wrong, and I hid it from them. I was a very good liar, manipulator, and they had no idea. And as long as I was this all-star athlete and kept up my grades, everything seemed fine, you know. But in the inside, I was lying all the time, and like I lived like this double life because I knew better. I knew that drinking was not okay. I knew lying was not okay, but I couldn't stop, and I had no idea how to stop. And so, you know, and there were times that, like, I would try and hint at my mom. I would go on these basketball tournaments, and I would say things like, you know, I'd love going away on these basketball tournaments, because I don't have to go to those parties and run from the cops. And what I was trying to say is I don't have to drink, because when I was around alcohol, like, I had to drink. And so what ended up happening was I got into college to play soccer at a Division I school, and it was, like, a big deal to me. Nobody from my town really, like, got that opportunity. And I spent the entire summer at a bar. There was a drinking contest going on, and, I mean, you won a yard thing. That was it. And for me, I was so competitive. I didn't care what I was winning. I just wanted to win. And so I spent the whole summer in this bar drinking rather than getting into shape and doing what I was supposed to be doing for the preseason soccer. So I got to the soccer camp. I left for college early. I got there. They would wake me up at 6 o'clock in the morning to run after the coach in a golf cart. I could not run. I could not keep up. And then they said, you know, we drug test, and, you know, you may get drug tested 4 times. The person next to you may never get drug tested, because it was totally at a random. And I was, you know, I just thought to myself, like, I'm in terrible shape. I'm like, how am I supposed to go through college without using drugs? This is ridiculous. And so I quit. And, you know, and that was just one of the first things. Like, my dream was to play sports in college, and I just right away just gave it up. And I called my parents, and I kind of just said, you know, it's not for me. I want to go through college like a normal college kid. I don't want to have to be friends with just soccer players. And so I came home. And then I went back to college when it was like everyone else went, and I spent the next 4 years drinking and doing drugs. And so many times I tried to quit and stop. The thing is, I never tried to control it, because my whole thing was, is, you know, I just liked shots of vodka because it was all about getting wasted and it was less calories. And then, you know, I started doing cocaine. The first time I did it, I cried myself to sleep, because I was like, I'm raised better than this. I know better than this. What am I doing? And, you know, and I started doing that, and then it crossed the line of every time I drank, I had to get cocaine. And, you know, I would go, like, just searching and searching. And, you know, and I went through the 4 years of college. I have no idea how I graduated. I cheated my way through. I paid people to write papers. I got caught many times, and somehow I got out of it. You know, I was put on probation for underage drinking, put on probation for getting caught. I was taken to the hospital. One of my friends and I, we were like wrestling, I think, and I hit my head against the bar, and I had got stitches in my head. And it was, you know, I was never gotten stitches, never broke a bone playing sports, but, you know, with drinking, like anything, you know. And I remember being at the doctor, and they were like, you need stitches. And I was like, no, I'm fine. And I had blood pouring down my face, and I'm like, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong. And then the doctor was like, how much did you drink tonight? And I was like, nothing. And he's like, you know, he's like in my face, because it's all, and he's like, I could smell alcohol all over you. And I'm like, no, I didn't drink anything. And I was just kept saying I didn't drink anything. Anyway, I ended up having stitches, 11 stitches on my forehead. And the best part was the next day I went and I had to take a test. And the professor was like, you know, I would have allowed you to make up this test. I had this huge bandage on my head. And I wanted to look at her and be like, if I made up that test, I would not have been able to cheat. So I had to show up, because I would have taken it by myself. And you know, everything was just always planned, you know, so I thought. And, you know, I went away a couple of times, you know, my friends, I would come back and they would say things like, you know, I think you need help. And I'm like, no, it's college, it's spring break, that's what you do in Jamaica. And, you know, and I think I'm the only person that ever came back from Jamaica. And I mean, I burned very easily, and I did not get, I was like not burnt for the first time. And it had nothing to do with wearing sunblock, because I don't believe in sunblock. And it was, I spent the entire time inside my hotel room just doing coke the whole time. And you know, and everything I kept saying was, I'll stop when I graduate. This is what you do when you're in college. And so I finally graduated, and my parents, you know, they were like, you worked so hard, you know, you can have the summer off. And so I was like, great. So I took the summer off not working, and, you know, just came back to Westchester. My friend found friends that were doing the same thing I was doing, and just started doing it, you know, here. And we would come into the city all the time. And then I started to realize, like, I don't need to come into the city. There's local bars in Westchester. It got to the point, like, I didn't care where I was going anymore. Some of my friends wanted to go to, like, the really nice places. And I was just like, I don't need to do that. I can go to the local bar. All I need to do is drink and do drugs. It does not matter where I am. And, you know, so I started, you know, things obviously were getting worse. You know, I was, I don't remember exactly what happened, obviously, but I was at the, you know, somewhere in the Jersey Shore, and I got kicked out because I thought it would be okay to just do lines of coke on the table in the bar. And I got kicked out, and the next thing I know, I am showing up at my friend's parents' beach house with one shoe, and I had bandages all over my arms when I woke up the next day, and I had no idea where they came from. My phone was not working, and my friends called the cops because I'm not from Jersey, and I don't really know where I'm going. And I had somebody's phone, some random guy's phone number in my phone, and I decided to call it just because I was really scared. I had no idea what happened. You know, I had woken up with bruises and, you know, had twisted my ankle many times, but I had bandages on me, and I had no idea who put bandages on me. And he said that, you know, I apparently, like, lost my coke and started asking people if they had coke, and they did, and I went with them, and I fell down a flight of stairs, they said, and they took me back, and they bandaged me up, and they said that one of the guy's girlfriends held my hair back while I was throwing up. And, I mean, I was pretty amazed. You know, like, I'm some random girl following people around for coke and throwing up, and these people are taking care of me. I mean, I never thought about God, but, like, when I look back at my story, like, somebody was definitely watching after me. And, you know, and I called AA when I got back to, when I got back after that weekend. I was just like, you know, things are getting out of hand, and I keep saying, oh, when I get a job, when I do this. And I called AA, and they were like, you know, there's a meeting in White Plains in a half an hour. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. I don't know what I'll tell my parents. And they were like, tell your parents you're going to the mall. And I said, that's lying. And I was in such denial that I had been lying all this time about my drinking. Like, they still had no idea that I drank. And so I didn't go to the meeting. And what ended up happening throughout this time was I decided to go back to school to be a teacher. And I figured that I'd go be a gym teacher. I was like, I love sports. No offense if anyone's a gym teacher. I was like, what do they do all day? They just give a bunch of kids basketballs. They play all day. I figured I could do that, leave work, go to the gym, work out, and make it in time for happy hour. And so I went back to school, and I did that, and I did it really fast so I could move out of my parents' house, and I ended up in the city, and within, 4 months, I ended up in rehab. My parents weren't there anymore to, you know, be like, you got to get up for work. I could now drink, obviously, in my apartment. I could have things delivered to my apartment, and you know, I was able to do it exactly how I was doing it, just I didn't have to hide it anymore, so it was a lot easier. So I ended up, you know, I had kept telling my best friend from home, I need to stop doing drugs, I need to stop doing drugs. And she said, you know, you need to stop drinking. And I'm like, well, we've known that for a very long time. But I think it's the drugs that, you know, like when I do drugs, I really can't get to work, I have a hard time. So I told her I was going to stop, and then, of course, you know, I said I'd stop, and then we were out again, and I didn't stop, and I called her the next morning. It was like 8 a.m. My first year teaching, I was already told I was taking off too many days, and I called her, and I asked and said I needed help. She said, call your mom, tell her. I said, I can't call my mom. She doesn't know anything. So she said, you know, call your mom's best friend, who's like, you know, like an aunt to me. Called her. She obviously called my mom. And I started going. I went up to this outpatient program, and they you know, we're like, you need to stay. I said, no, my mom will think it's really bad. And they're like, it is really bad. My whole thing was I just never wanted my parents to know how bad anything was because I was this really good kid. And so really quick, fast forward, through that program, I started going to AA. I wouldn't go. And then I, you know, was outpatient and I started drinking. And through that program, I found AA. I finally went. I had been out all night, Googled it. At that time, there was Google. I Googled it, and I showed up, and I didn't say a word. And the person who spoke, our stories were completely different. And the one thing I remember she said was, every morning she would wake up and say, I'm never drinking again. And then a few hours later, she was drinking again. And that's everything I kept telling my friends. I was like, I'm never drinking again. And they used to say if they had a nickel for every time I said that, they'd be millionaires. And so I ended up going to AA, and I put together some time. And obviously it sounds probably like a relapse because there's a relapse. I put together some time. I got a sponsor. I did some of the steps. I never did them all. And, you know, I started, like, exercising, and I started losing weight. And I was like, hey, it's an amazing diet. This is fabulous. I decided to go to grad school again. And I put that first. And I just was like, now I have grad school. That's going to be my new thing. I don't need people. I don't need to go out because I'm just going to study. And but then I also stopped exercising. So I started gaining weight. So I was like, AA sucks. Now I'm gaining weight. And so I ended up drinking. You know, it was fully planned. I was not as connected. My sponsor had moved, and I didn't get like that connected. And I, you know, deep down, when I first came in, I was 25, and deep down, I always in my head used to tell myself, I know I'm going to drink again. I know I'm going to drink again. It was all a mistake. And so I did. And just to, you know, sum it all up, in that next few years, I ended up in 4 more rehabs, a detox, a psych ward, and at 30 years old, I moved back to my parents, not their house because they sold it to a condo and lived on the couch in the living room. It was awful, and it was the house that I wanted to get away from so badly because of all the fighting with my brother and just, like, you know, did not want to be there. And, you know, that was my best thinking to get me back there, where I wanted to leave so fast. And I lived there for 8 months. I didn't go to any meetings. I didn't have a car. I went to one, but it's different in Westchester. So I didn't have a car, and so I kind of just figured, you know, I'm not going to drink. I'm living with my parents. And I ended up, you know, I took time off from work. And I came back to the city, and I didn't really get connected again. I was still in grad school, and I would go to meetings here and there. I kind of, like, I would go into a meeting, eat some chocolate, say hi, and leave. And that was kind of my thing, especially at a meeting on Chapter 5 on Wednesday nights. My friends make fun of me. I would literally go in there, get some chocolate, say hi, I'm here, you see me, and then I would just leave and not stay for the meeting. And, you know, and finally what ended up happening was I was at a new job, and they were young, and it was happy hour, and I was like, this is amazing, this is what I wanted. And I started drinking with them, and then I started seeing my life, and I was like, I'm going to end up back on that couch, or I'm going to end up back in rehab, and I don't want it. And I drank one more time. That was the graduation of the seniors at my high school. And I got really drunk. And then the next day, I took a nap in the fitness room. I came out with a big red mark on my face. And my assistant principal's like, were you sleeping? And I said, no. And it was pretty obvious. And I was so hungover. I went to a meeting the next day. And then 2 days later, I got a sponsor. And from then on, I've done everything that my sponsor has said. You know, my life has changed so much, and it's just because I did everything that this time around. And I realized all the things I didn't do that first time. You know, she said immediately, like, the whole 90-90 service commitments, call her every day. I remember the first day I had to call her, she was like, call me. I, like, was praying she would not pick up the phone. And it was the kind of voicemail where it was the phone number. So I was like, I'm not leaving a message. And so I hung up, and I then, you know, I was like, she said to leave a message. So I called my friend, and I was like, is this her number? And she's like, yes. And, I mean, we read the first day from the big book for 3 hours. I was kind of like, what did I get myself into? I met her the next day, and we read another 3 hours, and then I was just like, this is ridiculous. But I just kept doing it. You know, I was so hopeless. I had, you know, I didn't really talk about it, but I had gone through trauma when I was younger. I had other things going on that I really just felt hopeless. I felt like I had no future. I did not care. Like, I just didn't care what happened any day. I just was really going through the motions of life. I really worked the steps. And I always would say that once I get through all 12 steps, that's when I'm going to drink, because I'm going to prove AA wrong. And I did go through all 12 steps, and I did not drink. So that's good. This program is amazing. I mean, for me, when I was counting days, my grandfather, he died, and I did the eulogy, and he was such a spiritual person. I had no idea. My mom, you know, told me things to include about how he prayed for people, and I had no idea. And it was so AA to me, like how we pray not for ourselves, but we pray for, you know, for other people. We don't pray for things sometimes. And that's how he was. And it was amazing. And I, you know, and he was in the Holocaust, and like I kind of, you know, and he believed in God and he prayed every day. And I was like, you know, if he could go through that and believe there was a God, and he believed the reason he lived was because there was a God, then I'm like, who am I to be like, nope, no God. And it wasn't that I never didn't, you know, I didn't believe in it. I just didn't have a conscious contact with any higher power. And I started finding one, and I started praying every day. And, you know, I went to meetings every day, and I started really getting connected. And in my first year, I went to meetings every day, and I really did a lot of the sober things, and I went on the trips, and I had fun, and I couldn't believe that I could have fun. And, you know, and I got sponsees, and I started sponsoring, and that was just amazing. And over the past couple of years, my job that I was teaching at, like, my principal and I didn't get along at all. I used to say the meanest things about her, to the point where I was told that, like, the things I'm saying, I really should not say out loud. I mean, if I want to think it, that's not okay, but not to say it out loud either. And, you know, now we get along so well. I love my job. I am so much more involved. I realize the more that I put in, the more that I get. You know, I coach the soccer team. I throw the prom, things I never would have thought I would have done. I do all the fun things at my school, and, you know, the kids really appreciate it. And, you know, and it's all because of this program, because I don't, in the past, it was like, when is 3:15 happening? I need to go drink. And now it's like, oh, well, I'm there till 4:30. I'm there till 5:00. It's not that big of a deal. And, you know, a couple more things, like my parents moved. They moved to outside of Buffalo, which is just strange because usually Jewish parents move to Florida. But my brother was there. They needed to get away after my grandma passed away. And it's been interesting. You know, my parents, I was, you know, very close with them, but it's actually been it's been nice because, you know, they're far away. And, you know, at the same time, though, it's a little bit hard. I don't see them as much. I recently moved to Queens, which I never thought would happen either. But, you know, part of this program, you know, just, like, it's not my plan. I just kind of do it. I just keep, you know, showing up. And, you know, I'm so grateful for this program. I think I would probably be dead or, you know, in another rehab or institution if I didn't have this program, that's for sure. And I would not have the relationships that I have today. I've got really good friends, you know, that actually know things about me, where in the past it was all just very superficial because I didn't want anyone to know anything about me. You know, I don't know. I just, I'm, like, this program has just given me so much. And that, I hate saying that because I was that person that would sit in meetings and be like, I hate AA and I hate everything and I hate being here. But, you know, the truth is that I really do like that I'm part of, you know, AA and I've done the 12 steps. Oh, the last thing I need to share is step 6 is my favorite step, character defects. I came in and didn't think I had any. And then I found out I did. And it's been really interesting because, you know, I never thought at work when my principal would ask me to do something extra, you know, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, don't you know who I am? I shouldn't even have to be working. But because I just felt very entitled, you know, I should be like, I should be telling you what to do. But, you know, and then again, like, now look, like, I love my job more than anything. So, you know, the steps have really, really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And that's it. Yeah, I'm done. Okay.